3857 Johnston Road, Valdosta, Georgia, 31601.
Where and what is your date of birth?
February the 9th, 1958. I was born in Gainesville, Florida.
Okay. And you have a family now, correct?
Sure.
Okay. How many children do you have?
I have 2 children.
What are their sexes?
I have a daughter, her name is Sarah. She is 17. And I have a son, his name is Derek. He's 13.
So Sarah's getting ready to go off to school herself.
Getting ready to graduate and go to Fried Hardeman University in Henderson, Tennessee.
Oh, wow. Where is Henderson?
It's about 40 miles from Memphis.
Okay. I was born in Jackson, Tennessee, which is outside of Memphis a little way.
Yeah.
I think I've been to Henderson.
Very close. You had to. Yeah. It's probably only 15
minutes. I had friends there. Because I remember hearing that name. That's neat. So it's a pretty cool area. It's close to Memphis, I guess. Let's see. Right. And mother and fathers. Okay. I guess maybe like all this together is kind of asking, you know, your mother and father's names, where they're from, kind of that kind of background information, ethnic heritage, you know, if you know, say,
Irish.
Yeah. Okay. So what was your mother's name?
Her name is Betty Duene. That's D-U-E-N-E. An odd name. Room. Her maiden name was Smith.
Okay.
And my dad's name is Thomas Spencer Broom.
Okay, and they were both, you could say Irish?
They're both Irish descent, yes.
Irish descent, right. How far back, how many generations have been in America?
I would think that my great granddaddy came over from Ireland. About my great-granddaddy, that would be my dad's granddaddy. Yes, my great-granddaddy. And they settled in South Carolina. And the name was Mac Broom, actually. And the odd thing is I went to school in Oklahoma Christian College, and my roommate was from California, and his last name was Mac Broom. And his descendants also came from South Carolina.
Oh, wow.
And so we probably were distant relatives, and we met, you know, chance meeting in college.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, pretty neat.
Just a side name, my name is Billy, and my roommate's name is Billy. First name, last name thing.
Yeah. You want to know where my parents were born? My dad was born in Chickamauga, Georgia. And my mother was born in Lyerly, Georgia. That's L-Y-E-R-L-Y. Close to Somerville, Georgia.
Okay. Are they still around today?
Yes, they are. Okay. My dad's a minister.
Do you know when, like the date of when your grandparents came, or you just know that your great-grandparents?
I just know my great-grandparents.
Came from Ireland.
Right.
Do you know any of the background information, like why they decided to come to America?
Potato famine, I'm pretty sure.
Do you know what they did? What your great-grandfather did before he came over to America?
No, but I think they were farmers.
These questions I don't really like. These questions, but
it's okay.
Okay. She's making us ask him. At least up here. I think down to right here.
That's okay.
But it does get, it does help us get a sense of, you know, we're talking about multicultural America, you know, where you kind of, you and your musical career and everything are in relationship to all these other forces like family and ethnicity and stuff. It says migrational experience and travel. I guess it's asking, I'm going to skip that one because I don't think that's important. Okay, you did say that you went to school, and right. This is talking about education, apprenticeship, and training experience. And this would be pertinent, I guess, to the project because.
Okay.
So, where did you say you went to school?
I went to Oklahoma Christian College. Now it's known as Oklahoma Christian University. They're in Edmond, Oklahoma. Suburbs of Oklahoma City.
Okay. Your occupational experience, I know you direct the music here every few Sundays.
Right.
What else, you know, do you do?
As far as what I do for occupation?
Yes, sir.
I'm a sales rep, a national sales rep for U.S. Press. It's a printing company here in town, owned by Kent Bisher.
Okay. And your church or religious affiliation would be the Church of Christ in Dashville.
Right.
I suppose, yeah. How long have you been a member of this church?
I've attended here for about a year and a half. I attended Forest Park Church of Christ. It's located at the corner of Forest and Park Avenue for about 21 years. I served as a deacon there and was a song director there also. My wife is the secretary for George Christian School across the street.
Okay.
And she's been there for about 7 years, and we live in Dasher and so really wanted to start attending here, but my brother, my older brother, was the minister of the Forest Park Church of Christ for 20 years. And so when I first moved to town, we started attending there and continued to attend there until he moved to North Alabama. And then at that time, it was a good transitional period of time for us to, you know, a good time to make a change. And since we live in this community and our neighbors all went to church here, and my wife teaches at the school that most of them, the kids attend, so it was just kind of a natural flow.
Yeah.
It's kind of unusual for me to be in a small congregation. The congregation at Forest Park is about 420 members.
Wow.
And so a little bigger than here in Dasher.
Yeah, well, I live right there. There's an apartment complex just right back called Oak Terrace.
Oh, yeah, I know where that is.
And so I often every, you know, Sunday drive by and see how large that congregation is. Are you a member of any like church organizations or civic or like social organizations?
Well, not currently. I have been a member of the Rotary Club in the past, in different business dealings. I have been a member of the tourism department here in Valdosta. I ran a hotel for about 5 years, a number of years ago, and so I've been involved in that. But basically just coached at the boys club for about 12 years, coached Little League Baseball. For about 12 years. But primarily, other than my occupational work at the church, I work with leading singing and with kids, you know.
Right.
I work with the youth, you know, as much as possible. You know, I think that they definitely are the future church of tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And you know, they, you know, the more that we work with them, the stronger the church will be in the future, and it keeps them out of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and kind of. So I enjoy that.
Any special interest, skills, or hobbies that you'd like to talk
about? Well, as far as, well, I mean, pertinent to the subject.
Yeah.
There's not. I play guitar. I play the piano by ear. My grandmother, on my dad's side of the family, she was a piano player in the Baptist Church, and she could play by ear. And my dad can, and I can too. It's just something that I can hear a sound, and it's easy for me to repeat it. So I can, you know. Now and then, like I said, I play guitar, but. Used to sing in weddings. I had a 12-string guitar and used to singing weddings all over the place, and myself and this lady, this, you know, she's a lady now, she was a girl when we first started. But we did that quite a bit. I've sang in quite a few gospel quartets, and currently singing one, you know, part time. We don't have the opportunity because we all have full time jobs to sing, you know, weekly. But when we get an opportunity, we sing here and there at functions, maybe at the school or at a camp someplace, a Bible camp or a retreat or something like that. Yes. But not during our worship service. Mm-hmm. As you note, the Church of Christ, basically, we're different than a lot of religious groups. We strictly have congregational singing. We don't have choirs. Mm-hmm. We don't have instrument of music. Mm-hmm. It's strictly a cappella singing. And basically, we base that strictly on the Bible. The church, the early church, that's how they did it. You know, they just sang. You know, and so that's what we do. We sing. We try to sing as pretty as we possibly can, but still, we just sing.
I've been to a few churches, and I've noticed, you know, I noticed while I was here a few times, and I really enjoy the music, and people do really seem to try to you know, sing the harmony, and, you know, right. It's, I mean, usually I've been to churches where, you know, everybody's singing the same, you know, the same notes, and maybe switching it up with, you know, like I would sing down an octave, but I would sing the same.
Oh, I say, yeah.
Thing as everyone else. I don't have a lot of background in music. I can't read music or anything, but I was in the chorus in high school. And,
right.
And I always sang and did anything that I did by ear, kind of like you. I never really... Well, I could look at a note on the page and kind of gauge where it's supposed to go.
Right.
I really had no...
Yeah. Well, I learned to read music as, you know, a young boy. Mm-hmm. Being a preacher's kid, my dad, he definitely wanted us to, you know, because in the church, he wanted us to be workers in the church, and so he wanted us to learn things that pertain to church work, and so we'd give, you know, public talks here and there, and our family loved to sing. We're mm-hmm. a family of... Everyone in my family sings.
Right.
And there's four boys and a girl in my family. One of my brothers is a preacher, but all of the boys are song leaders, song directors. You know, now my brother that's a preacher, he doesn't get an opportunity to do it very much because right. he's preaching. But he's, you know, and it was because my dad was. Mm-hmm. My dad was a song director, and his uncle was... a choral director at the church that they attended. It was, I believe, a Methodist church or something. So I come from a long line of people that are interested in music. On my mother's side of the family, they all played pianos and fiddles and very musically, as far as not so much singing, but as far as playing instruments, they were very musically inclined. And then my dad's side of the family, they were more singers than players. But and then with all of my brothers and myself, we all got, I guess, the hodgepodge of all of that put together,
right.
so to speak. And so, and my son, that's 13, we go to a convention every year. It's a training convention that we have. It's called Lads to Leaders, and Leaderettes are the girls. And what they basically do is they have speech competitions, and they have song leading competitions, and Bible bowls, and puppet theater, and just a variety yeah. of things. And so. My son, he's entered two different years, and he's won, let's see, first place in song leading, and which I was very proud of that. Wow. He also won first place in speech, but I was, you know, more so proud that because I'm a song leader.
Yeah.
You know, and so that he won first place in song leading, so I thought, well, you know, he definitely has the, you know, the skills to hopefully one day, if he chooses to do that, you know, to pursue it.
That's pretty cool. I guess one thing that I'm really interested in with this project, not only was I brought here because I think it was it. I'm trying to remember the lady's name, but my professor introduced me to a lady in the department who goes to church here, and she took my professor told me about the shade notes, and I
right,
came.
Her name is Armstrong. Her name Armstrong.
No, I don't think. I think it had Mick in it. Mick.
Be a church director
remember.
We have on McLeod.
In the bulletin, it mentioned her name.
McMullen.
McMullen.
Okay. What was her first name?
Catherine McMullen.
I bet probably her parents go here, her grandparents, and maybe that's the case, because we have several McMullens. We have a Pat and Ellis McMullen.
Okay.
We have a John C. and Betty Ann McMullen. We have a John Cranford McMullen. And so,
Catherine is a secretary in the music department, and my professor had talked to her about the Church of Christ in Dasher. And what drew me here was the shape notes, and I noticed how there was no musical instruments, and that was kind of neat. But I was wondering, how much experience you've had with shape notes. Is that something that you started working with when you came here, or I don't know very much about it. But
I mean, basically, any hymnal that you find, you'll find that they're written in shape notes opposed to round notes.
Okay.
And basically, I brought this book. I've had this book for a very long period of time. But this is something that that might help you along. Basically, you have absolute pitches.
Right.
And what absolute pitches are is C, D, E, F, G, A, B, C.
Okay.
That's the chromatic scale. Okay. As far as relative pitches, it's Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Ti, Do. And those are shape notes. And so Do through Do is shape notes which represent absolute pitches.
Right.
C, D, E, F, G, A, B, C.
Okay.
And so basically you have, when you look at the music, you have lines and spaces, and you basically can determine the key a song is written in, based upon that, and so whether it has sharps or flats, and but I think the shape notes basically, the intent of them is it's easy for a person to recognize that doesn't have a lot of musical experience,
mm-hmm.
they can recognize that note by its shape and know that they should go up this much or go down this much, because they learn to sing Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Ti, Do. And so because of that, whatever the key a song is written in, they can realize they can go up and down. But let's say this song right here, this song it has, if you look at this song is called You Are My All in All.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then you have the note is written in G. Okay, it's G sharp actually. G sharp, that's the key that this song is sang in, whether it's shape notes or round notes. It's
right.
The same key. And basically, the only difference between round notes and shape notes is that they're easier to recognize. So if a person knew how to sing these notes, and by looking at them, they could go Do, Re, Mi, Do, because this is a Do, and this is a Re, and this is Mi. Do, Re, Mi. And know how to go up and down. So mm-hmm. it would go Do, Re, Mi, Re, Re, Do, Ti, Do, Ti, Do, Re, Mi, So, So. So it goes up and down.
Okay.
And then if you sang it, You are my strength when I am weak, You are the treasure that I seek. And so basically, you know how to sing the note, and you know how to go up and down based on the shape of that note.
Mm-hmm.
And so a person that does have a lot of musical experience, they can look at the shape of the note and know how to follow it by going up and down, and that's really the only difference between shape notes and round notes.
Okay. Now, is this used in teaching the children how to sing, or is it kind of utilized like this is this shape means Do, this means Re?
Yeah. If I teach a child how to direct song service, which I have a song leading class. I basically teach them how to use a pitch pipe, because when you've led singing for a long period of time, well, even if you have, some people have very good pitch where they can pitch songs close without a pitch pipe.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect pitch is hard to come by. I have close to perfect pitch. You can wake me up in the middle of the night and I can sing middle C just about any time. And it's just one of those things, but I've been singing for since I could talk,
mm-hmm.
and so it makes a big difference. But most people can't do that. So you have a tuning fork, mm-hmm. which would be in middle C, or you have a pitch pipe. And a pitch pipe basically would have the chromatic scale on it. And you can blow the key that you're leading the song in. So I would blow a G sharp,
mm-hmm.
And when I blow the G sharp, I would know that that's the key that the song is written in. The Do, note is always on the line of the key that it's written in.
Right.
It always is. And so basically, they can figure out what the key is just by based on that. They can look. They can say, okay, where's the do at? And this is a G sharp. And so
okay.
That's how we know which key it's written in. If the first note of the song was not in the key that it was written in, but it might be an A or a B or something,
mm-hmm.
then they could blow that note. They could blow A and start the song, and they're blowing the actual first word they say.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically, we teach them lines and spaces, how to get pitch of a song. We teach them rhythm, 4-4 time, 3-4 time, 6-8 time. We teach them how many beats are to a measure. It's things that anyone would learn in music mm-hmm. class, because it's very crucial in order to make sure that you have the timing down for a song, to make sure that it's beat properly. So those are things that we teach. But more people that attend church, probably whether it's a member of the Church of Christ or even denominations, mm-hmm. they probably have songs that they learn from memory more than not.
Right.
I would say that most people that attend even Dash or Church of Christ, and they've been singing shape notes all of their life, don't really know what shape notes are.
Right.
They know that this is what they sing, and this is what these notes always look like all of their life.
Wow.
And all of their grandparents' life, because you can pick songbooks up that are, let's say, that songbook right there is 40 years old, that red one behind you,
mm-hmm.
and I assure you it had shape notes in it, and I've got songbooks at the house that are 100 years old, and they had shape notes. And it's something that had just been passed down from generation to generation.
See, because, like, when I first started the project, I thought, shape notes, wow, this is something new. I'd never seen them before. I'd been to churches that didn't use shape notes.
Yeah.
And I'd seen hymnals that didn't. And I initially was like, this is going to be kind of tough. I don't know. And then I went to the library, and I found just tons of information. I went on the internet, and I just found so much stuff. So I realized that it's more widespread than I first imagined, but it's still new to me, and the history of it's very interesting.
This book was written, I bet it has it in front of this book. It has to be very old. The man that gave it to me, he had died just a few years ago, and he was about 90-something years old. And let's see a copyright on this book.
That might be an indication how old it is.
Maybe. Well, you can take a look at it. It's been around for a while. It's the book's quite old. But shape notes have been around for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Most people, like I said, can't read music. There are a lot of members of the church that do read music, and they're taught from generation to generation as far as how to sing parts. It's how to sing. Basically, in our congregation, we sing 4-4 harmony.
Mm-hmm.
There's always going to be soprano, alto, tenor, and bass. 4-4 harmony. That's sang throughout. Throughout any of the churches of Christ that you'll mm-hmm. find, unless you've got 10 or 15 people, they don't have enough really to do that. Typically, there are probably quite a few song leaders that direct singing strictly from memorization. They memorize the song. It's kind of like you've heard the song Jesus Loves Me. Well, you learn this tune Jesus Loves Me, and every time you think of the Jesus Loves Me, I bet that you sing it in the same key, because that's how you memorized it. And so if you learn Jesus Loves Me, you would go, Jesus loves me, this I know. And around the world, most people sing the song Jesus Loves Me in that same key, because they learn to
mm-hmm.
sing Jesus Loves Me in that same key.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same way that a lot of song leaders do in the Church of Christ or wherever that directs singing is from memorization. They learned it a song a certain way, and so that is the key that they always start that song in. And when that song pops in their mind, Amazing Grace, they're going to say, Amazing Grace. Immediately, that's the key that's going to pop in their mind,
mm-hmm.
because that's how they learn the song, just like Jingle Bells.
Right,
it's no different.
Right.
And so I think most people do that rather than reading shape notes or not reading shape notes. Now people that sing in groups, like when I sing in a quartet,
mm-hmm.
sure, the notes are very essential, because we have very tight harmony. And it's something that that it really matters a lot.
Okay.
If we have the note correct and if it has the sound to make the chord that we want it to make. Mm-hmm. But the Church of Christ, when we sing because the Bible tells us to sing and make melody in your heart. And so our singing is something that we're doing for the Lord. It's to build us up. Mm-hmm. But the melody is supposed to be the words that we're singing and the expression of what it, you know, rather than how pretty it sounds.
Right.
If we want it to sound pretty.
Right.
You know, so I, being a song leader, really want it to sound as good as possible. But it's one of those things that... That's not the main thrust, but I think that most Church of Christ that you run across, their singing usually is quite good, and it's because they don't have an instrument to have as a crutch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if a person all their life has listened to a piano play the song, then as long as that piano's playing the song, they can sing it with the piano playing the song. But we never use a piano playing the song, so they learned it without it, and it's the same way of learning anything. It's just the way that they learned it.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about your career in music and leading songs and quartets and
okay.
And what would you say would maybe be a few highlights of, you know, of some of the things that you've done, some things that you just really remember that really stick out, like, you know.
Well, let's see. When I was in high school, I went to school in Somerville, Georgia. We moved up to where my parents were from to build a retirement house for my dad and mom. And so I went to the high school there and was in a quartet. It was a 3A competition, and we won second quartet in the state of Georgia. We should have won first, but anyway, anytime you have some competition like that, it's somewhat judgmental.
Right.
But we were on television, and you know, I was very young. You know, I was only like 16 years old, and I thought that was pretty neat that we got to be televised, and it was a great honor to represent our school, and you know, it's neat. And I was, you know, even though I love music, you know, I was always an athlete. I played football, and I played on the tennis team, and. In JV, you know, junior high, I played basketball and a lot of different sports. And so, most people, when you think of musicians, a lot of times you think of people that are, you know, are not athletes. You know,
right.
You know, if you're a musician, how can you be an athlete? But in actuality, you know, I was probably, you know, I was very much an athlete that loved music.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but that was a highlight. I attended Oklahoma Christian College, and at Oklahoma Christian College, I had the opportunity to. Get to sing in a lot of quartets and different groups, and we traveled. We went to New Mexico and different places, doing retreats. And I used to lead singing at youth rallies. Willie Franklin, he's a gospel minister now, but used to be a professional football player. And I've been in several youth rallies with him, where I direct, you know, I led, you know, got to lead singing devotional songs and stuff with kids, and so, you know, that. You know, that was always neat. In college, when I would lead singing in chapel or different things, our attendance was somewhere around 2,400 people. And so it was large groups, and you had massive sound. And you knew how the angels in heaven would sing when you heard groups like that sing. Because when you have 2,400 people that, you know, that are singing with good acoustics and everything, it's just, you know, and it's so exciting because you... up front, you hear the sound far better than the person sitting there. They hear it, but they can't hear it like you can hear it.
Right.
You know, and it's just, you know, it's a big high, I guess, so to speak. You know, leading singing like that. But even in the small groups of 30 or 40, you know, it's neat. I sang in my wedding, as my wife just before she walked down the aisle. I sang to her in our wedding.
So sweet. I can't imagine doing that. I'd be so nervous.
Yeah, but I'm more nervous talking than I am singing for some reason.
Really?
It's just, to me, singing is something that was just natural, something I've always done. Talking was something that, as a young fellow, I was pretty shy. And so, talking was not my forte. Let me sing it. I could sing it far better than I could talk it.
Oh, wow. Let's see. Do you know anything about the history of the church,
Christ here in Dasher or the community? Or?
A little bit. Basically, the church in Dasher has been around. Well, here's a picture of it, of the building from in 1950. The church was established here in Dasher, I think somewhere 1880s possibly. Mm-hmm. It was a long, let's see, they might have that in this book. I believe they do. The History of Dasher. Okay, here we go. The Dashers moved to Lowndes County near the city of Valdosta in 1832. This group did. And they started...
what was the group?
This family, they were called Dashers.
Dashers.
And that's what the city was named after.
Okay.
It was after a group called Dashers. But the church has been, let's see here, 1914 is when the school was built. So sometime around the late 1800s, I guess, is when the church at Dasher was first started, in the late 1800s. 1914, like I said, the school right across the street was started.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been around for more than 150 years. Dasher Church of Christ has been around for about 150 years.
Wow.
And so when you talk about Dasher, you talk about people that their names are Weisenbaker, or their names are Copeland, or their names are McLeod.
Mm-hmm.
And these families have long heritage in the Dasher community. You can look on the wall out there of past elders and things. And some of those pictures are quite old. And you'll see that their names are Weisenbakers or Copelands.
Right.
And that's just the people that lived in this region and just never moved away. And so it's just kind of one after the other. So, yes, and if you want to read this, as a matter of fact, that's no problem. If you want to photocopy it, take it with you to use for your reference.
Great.
That
really
gives you a complete heritage of this, I think, a quick synopsis anyway, of the church here at Dasher.
And this is kind of like a...
It's just a church directory that has... Okay. Pictorial directory that has the pictures and the names of people that attend.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well,
yeah, we'll make you a photocopy of that.
Awesome, awesome. The names like Weisenbaker, I mean, do you know any of the background of that or?
No.
I notice a lot of the same names in the bulletin every week, just
right.
You see the same family names. So. All that was.
I would say that about three-quarters of the people that attend here are somewhat related,
mm-hmm.
through marriage or something.
Right.
They have some kind of family connection of some sort. Maybe their grandson married their granddaughter, but they definitely, when you have a group of people that have been attending, live in the same community and have been attending a church together for that period of time, you're bound to have a lot of... family connections.
Right, right. Let's see. I don't know if I'll be able to ask this question like the way I want to, but I noticed that there are several hymns that are sung every Sunday. It's not just, opening, middle, end of meeting. You guys sing a lot.
Right.
Is there any reasoning for this? Any kind of, is it just any function of singing so much that you can think of that just, or is it just the way it's always been? And
I think that, I think that as far as scripturally is concerned, I think that singing is important. The Bible tells us to sing,
mm-hmm.
So we should sing. As far as the number of songs, there's no... See, everything that we do during our worship is based on strictly Bible.
Right.
We don't add to it. We don't take it away. We don't have any man-made creeds or anything.
Okay.
We strictly go by the New Testament. And so there's no guidelines telling us, how much to sing. But and so different congregations will vary. Mm-hmm. I think that we probably sing more songs here than other congregations I've attended, before.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that probably on a Sunday morning we'll sing maybe 7 songs,
mm-hmm.
During the course of the whole service. At Forest Park, we probably would sing more like 5 or 6 songs.
Right.
I would say that most of the time, you're at least going to sing, in most churches of Christ, they're at least going to sing 4 songs at least,
mm-hmm.
4 or 5. But as far as the number, no. I think that singing is uplifting.
Right.
And I believe that and I believe that the people here believe that. They had a song leader that was here. His name was Weisbaker, by the way. I met him when I first moved to town when I was 22 years old, just out of college, and he was still directing song service here. And he was, you know, he was quite old. His picture's on the wall over there in the lobby. But he was a very good musician and a very good song director. And because of that, they have a lot of musical background. You know, the longer a song leader has led in a place, the more they're used to them.
Mm-hmm.
And the better that song leader is, usually the better their singing is.
Right.
You know, because he's brought them along and taught them, so to speak.
Okay.
You know, if a song leader's bad, how good can the singing be?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you're only as good as your leader, as only as strong as your leader,
right.
So to speak. But as far as the number of songs, I think it's strictly just depending on the group. But typically, we use songs as like a change of mood.
Mm-hmm.
And so most of the time, we will sing a song before we take a communion or the
right.
Lord's Supper, and it's to change gear, so to speak, and get our mind focused on, you know, what we're fixing to do. Sometimes you might sing a song before prayer to get your mind thinking about, you know, giving alms and praying to God. We always sing a song of invitation or encouragement after the sermon, and it's basically a song to give people opportunity if they want to come forward and confess sins in their life, if they want to become baptized, they have that opportunity. And it's a song, usually it's an invitation song, is a song to of encouragement, telling them that, you know, the Lord's here, he's waiting on you. They're usually exciting songs, or sometimes they're condemning songs. They're telling you, look, you know, sinner, you know, straighten out, so to speak. You know, songs are used basically like to change moods, I guess.
Right.
I usually sing a song that's very peppy before the sermon because I want the preacher, I want him energized. I want him, when he goes up there, all his juices are flowing because he's got excited because of that song was exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I woke his group, you know, I woke the congregation up for him.
Yeah.
So the congregation's they're awake. I got them all pepped up. And so he's got them with their mind still going good.
Right.
If I lulled them to sleep with a lot of boring songs, then when he gets them, he's going to have a hard road to hoe, so to speak,
yeah.
Because I've already lulled him to sleep. How in the world is he going to wake them up? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, that's, but it, the number of songs is strictly by opinion or
yeah.
personal preference.
All right. Well, another thing I noticed, like I talked to you the other day about how I came a few different times, and there would be different song leaders. How is that set up here? Is it?
Well, I've only been here a little over a year, I guess, and so a year and a half. And so most of the song leaders that are here, they were here when I came.
Mm-hmm.
But primarily, if a person wants to lead singing, they will let them. The criteria, I guess, would be is, you know, if they have somewhat ability to do it, first of all. But more and more, you know, I think that, you know, they're leaning to, as a matter of fact, they try on Sundays to use their better song leaders on Sunday morning than they do on Sunday night or Wednesday night, just because you might have visitors and things of that nature. And, you know, and so a person that maybe hasn't led singing very much, he might lead more on Wednesday night than he would a Sunday morning.
Okay.
Or a Sunday night. And so they kind of structure it that way. And so me being new here, and me leading singing for a long time in different churches and stuff, you know, I really didn't want to come in with an attitude of, hey, you know, let me take over and do it.
Yeah.
And so basically I've never said anything. I just sit back and I lead when they want me to, and that's usually every other week. But and then the other song leaders, they fill in. But, you know, but I guess primarily we have probably four song leaders that lead on Sunday morning or on Sunday night. And then we've got several others that will lead just on Wednesday nights.
All right.
Young boys or men that like to do it but maybe aren't real proficient at it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see. Catch you for about 45 minutes already.
Okay.
I don't want to
keep you much longer.
Oh, it's okay.
I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day and doing this for me.
Sure. I don't think I really gave you very much, but I don't feel like I have. But
always in interviews, the person being interviewed, and when I've been interviewed, you always say, you know, I don't think I, but really you have. You've really helped me a lot. You've helped me to shape this project. It's just a small, you know, 4 or 5 pages. You know, I don't have to write a volume, and I'll incorporate your interview into some background research on shape notes and you know, song leading and stuff. So, so I mean, you've really helped me out a lot today. I really
basically
appreciate
a song leader's role. You know, a song leader's role is to motivate the group, and so basically when they pick songs out, or when they direct songs, they should do it with enthusiasm.
Mm-hmm.
They should believe what they're singing.
Right.
And they should do it with excitement. And if a song leader has those qualities when they're directing song service, then they can generate that to the audience that's singing with them. So they can give them the enthusiasm. And that's the key for a song leader to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
They have to be willing to take that leap of faith and to sing out with enthusiasm, whether people might think they're foolish looking or not, you know, because basically a song leader, they have to start the song, and whether the congregation sings with them, you know, they probably will, but what if they don't?
Yeah.
You know, I've sang songs that were new to a group, and I didn't know it was new to a group because maybe I was new to the group, and I sing mostly by myself, but you don't stop. You know, you just keep going, and there's no need to apologize, because when you're doing it for not for your glory, but God's glory.
Right.
And so everything that I have as a song leader and possess the talents that I have, they're not my glory anyway. It's God's glory that gave it to me, and He gets all the credit.
Okay.
And I'm just a mouthpiece.
Right.
Now you can turn it off.